Peter Gagg, who drives it through. Oh, that's a magnificent goal, a sensational goal by the Millwall captain, Mitchell van der Gagg.
We hit the high notes on the park. It was, that's how we came, became a great team together, you know. It was just unfortunate, we never won anything.
Lane's in trouble, there's Steve Kitch. The super sub has done it again, and Millwall are back in front.
Without supporters, you cannot play a game. They are a very, very important part of the club.
Jukovic on the chase, might get there. Handel is with it. Jukovic! Oh, wow! Oh, wow! Lukas Jukovic!
I remember to this day, it was unbelievable. And that's another reason I love going back to Fir Park, because you do get to interact with the supporters again, who were wonderful for me.
Chance here for Motherwell. This is Pettigrew, outnumbered though, still has it. Chance of a lifetime for Pettigrew, and it is there!
Yeah, obviously being on the podcast is everything I've dreamed of.
Goes through the middle though, Marvin Johnson. Defenders backing off. To get a deflection! And there goes! Misjudged by Bell! Fir Park, twisting, shouting, shaking!
Hello and welcome to the MFC podcast. Tonight, myself, Jay and Buster will go over the game that wasn't against Partick Thistle, cover the Scottish Cup draw, discuss the option of summer football, and cover this week's Remember Well question. Welcome along, guys.
Cheers.
Hi there, thank you.
Well, I've set the agenda there in the intro. Thistle away. I believe you guys enjoyed your day out, but slightly disappointing we weren't able to carry on the momentum from the Hearts game, Jay.
Aye, that's it. You know, I suppose on paper or in the grand scheme of things, a 2-each draw at home to Hearts isn't the world's greatest result, but based on some of the performances we've been getting in recent weeks, particularly that one up at Dingwall, it was the kind of, you know, it was such a markedly different performance. It was the kind of game that you would have, you know, wanted to carry on some sort of momentum, you know, into the next week, get the confidence levels up a little bit more with a better, you know, another good performance. And it does kind of feel as though that's our luck at the moment. You know, you get finally get a good performance and a half decent result, and the next week your game's rained off. So hopefully, you know, things go to plan for Saturday's game and we can actually get on the park, because there's no need to, you know, think that all the momentum just suddenly evaporates because the game didn't happen Saturday. But you would like to think that any kind of benefits or positives that we took from the Hearts game will still be there by the time we play on Saturday. But you're right, it was a good day nonetheless. You know, it was interesting. We bumped into a good few other Motherwell fans as well, and strange to say, well, perhaps unsurprisingly, nobody seemed too downhearted that the game wasn't on.
Buster, the Saturdays without football are quite difficult, but I guess in weather like that, it wasn't very surprising to see the game fall foul of the weather.
I suppose not, no. But you know, we had a wee sort of chat about it, and the wind was horrendous. I didn't really see much water lying in about Glasgow, I suppose, but you know, I suppose Maryhill's just in the outskirts, so I don't know what it was like there. I didn't even see any pictures of the park or anything, but it was, you know, I felt kind of surprised that the games were called off so easily. You know, a waterlogged pitch. Again, I don't know what the drainage systems or anything like at these places, but you think a wee bit of cover on the park and, you know, a broom an hour before it, you'd be fine.
I think that's an issue for me. I'm not suggesting that this game should have been on, because I didn't see the park. When I got into town about, you know, 11:30, 12:00 on the Saturday, it was a standard, you know, dreich day in Glasgow. There was a little bit of drizzle, it was a bit windy. There was certainly nothing to suggest that a game couldn't go ahead if the park had been playable at that stage. You know, if the efforts had been put into prevent the park from being waterlogged overnight, then I have no doubt whatsoever that if there had been a pitch inspection at 1-2 o'clock, the game probably would have been on, because it wasn't, you know, a massively wet day, at least, you know, up to the kickoff. Although we spent a few hours in the pub, we were outside, you know, going from pub to pub, we did experience the weather outside, and it wasn't nearly as bad as I expected. You know, the way everybody was talking, I was expecting biblical rain and hurricanes, and it was just a pretty rubbish day, but that was it. And I think perhaps not in this case, because the weather has been outrageous, but I think at times, you know, calling a game off is perhaps the easy option. I think that clubs can be too quick to do so. I think when, you know, teams were announcing they were going to have pitch inspections the next day, before the rain had even really started, kind of showed that they already were considering calling games off. And I think at times clubs could put a bit more effort. It might cost a few more quid. It might, you know, involve a few more hands on deck. But I think that if more effort, you know, I think in, on occasion more effort could be put into getting games on. I think sometimes clubs can see it as an easy option just to let the game get called off.
See, I don't know whether I'm being kind of short-sighted, but growing up, I can't remember as many games being called off as there are just now. And that's despite the fact that all the technology and all the precautions are in place to maintain football parks. It seems now that the excuse of surrounding areas is brought into play, or travel for supporters to the game. And as much as we talk about fan experiences and everything else, I think that fans could have easily travelled to that game without major disruption and could have enjoyed their Saturday afternoons at the football. I think that while we talk about players being kind of pampered, supporters are to a certain extent as well, because I don't believe for a second that that was dangerous circumstances to travel to a game to.
I kind of disagree with that, to be fair. Again, as Jay says, you know, we were in and about the town centre, we were out in the rain, it was light rain, to be honest with you, if anything, at times. It was a bit windy here and there. And again, I was going to say, don't get me wrong, you know, I think if you go on, you know, your social media, your Facebooks and that, you can see the videos of Cineworld, you know, that thing falling off the roof at Cineworld and stuff. So there obviously was an element of really bad weather kicking about. But I think, you know, going back to the sort of, you know, what Jay was saying about the game maybe being called off a bit sort of prematurely, you know, we had rumours the day before that the game wasn't going to go ahead. And to be honest with you, you know, as I said, you know, a waterlogged pitch covers in a broom before the game, it would have went ahead 10 years ago, no bother probably. Mind watching years and years ago, I think it was Newcastle and Sunderland, and they basically played in a 6-inch puddle. Don't get me wrong, that shouldn't have went ahead, but, you know, I just think, as you say, there's maybe one or two games called off a bit too early. And again, this is me just talking without actually seeing what kind of state the park was in. So obviously the referees had a look at it and thought maybe the player's safety, you know, had to come first. So again, I can't really, despite the fact I'm going on about it, I can't really comment on the park.
Well, it's one of the ones as well, though. I think, you know, we talk about fans being treated like, you know, second-class citizens and criminals. No, I think a lot of it is treating fans at times like idiots. You know, it's almost, you know, you talk about, you know, Sparta's kind of take on it as you know, pampering fans. I think at times it's just treating them like idiots. I mean, we were talking in the pub on Saturday about a game through in Edinburgh. Can't remember if it was Hearts or Hibs, and I can't remember if the game was called off or they were talking about the game being called off because there was ice around the ground. You know, the idea that because pavements were slippy, and that's fair enough, but you know, if it was a gig, there would be no question that the gig would go ahead. You know, the idea that football fans, you know, despite, I mean, I'm 30 years old, I've had a good chunk of those 30 years I've been dealing with, you know, gravity and being able to walk on ice and things like that. It's not an issue. And I think that they're too quick to kind of assume that football fans don't have the motor skills or something like that to walk down the street in the rain. And I think at times that can be an issue. You know, there was that game, it was the idea, or there's ice around the ground, people might slip. And that's all right in theory, but then if there was a gig, you know, I presume if there were gigs and Glasgow on Saturday night, I'm pretty sure they probably all went ahead, regardless of whether fans had to get there in the wind or not. And I think that's a problem for me. I think that football gets treated a little bit differently from other, you know, other sports and other entertainment industries, where for some reason, because you're a football fan, you're not trusted, or you can't be expected to walk properly down the road. But obviously that's a separate issue than this one, I think, because by the sounds of it, the park was just flooded. Whether or not it could have been prevented better, then we don't know.
Yeah, there was a picture in the 6 o'clock news tonight, Firhill, that the park looked very flooded from kind of the tunnel, which is at the corner flag at Firhill. It looked very flooded at that end, but as I say, we don't know the kind of ins and outs of it, but more than half the Scottish football card was wiped at the weekend. Different reasons for different games, obviously. So we'll move on and we'll talk about the debate that's been caused because of that. The summer football. Motherwell chief executive, or general manager, sorry, Alan Burrows, very much in favour of running the league from November. I think it's March through November. He would like to see the league run. I'm completely against that, I must confess. I'm a bit of a sucker for tradition. I like the games over the festive period. I think it breaks things up quite nicely. The weather in Scotland is very unpredictable as it is, so you couldn't guarantee that the weather would hold out through these months that he's suggesting. I'd like to hear your guys' take on it, though. Disappointing to have a game called off this early on in the campaign. You'd expect there'll be a fair few follow between now and February, March time.
Well, I'm a bit like yourself. I'm sort of a traditionalist as well then, but I think you've already said, you know, the fact is, if we did move it to, you know, the summer period, the season's going to be still played over 10 months anyway. And, you know, there's years where we have very mild Decembers and Januaries, then it picks up in February and March, and, you know, the coldest months of the year. So it's not something you can predict, is it? Also, you know, the off-season's often used at Firth Park to relay the grass and, you know, let it grow in a bit and things like that. That's not going to happen in December. So I don't see how it would work that way. Don't get me wrong, you know, I think everybody wouldn't mind going along to the football in July, sitting there in your shorts and T-shirt, getting yourself a nice cold beer if the sun's out in July, but I think it would also lead to, not so much lead to it, but I think it'd also encourage a lot more people to watch football on the telly, like, you know, the English games and the foreign games during the winter, and I can't stand watching football on the telly, to be honest with you. You know, there's I could maybe watch one game a week, but there's that much football on the telly, I don't even bother. And I think that, you know, if there's nothing for people to do come November, December, January, they're going to sit and watch more, you know, these better teams. And I think that's where Scottish football's, you know, downfall is, really comparing us to these better leagues that are so easily available on telly.
But in the same token, the Welsh and Irish leagues run over these summer months. Is there a danger, Jay, that perhaps we start to kind of go down the route that these leagues are went down? And let's be fair, they're viewed as very, very inferior standard, aren't they?
Well, I think that, you know, the Welsh and Irish leagues are quite unique in a way, in that, you know, the Irish leagues, there's so many, there's a good number of their fans, you know, their teams in the league will be, you know, their second teams, because they'll be travelling across the ferry to support Celtic, you know, that'll be their big team. Similarly in Wales, you know, the big Welsh clubs don't even play in Wales, they play in England. So I think it's slightly unique in that way. That's not to say that it couldn't go that way, as Buster's saying, you know, if more Scottish fans start having, you know, Man United, Man City, Chelsea as their big teams, then, you know, it could go the same way, regardless of when you're playing your football. And, you know, he's completely right, the biggest battle that Scottish football faces, particularly since, you know, Sky Sports got involved, is that, you know, because we're part of the United Kingdom, we automatically compare our league to the English leagues, even although money, population, you know, so many factors are so completely different, they aren't comparable, and yet we try our hardest to do so. I think for me, I can see there are positives to it. I mean, we've all seen, you know, the Scottish clubs getting doings in Europe because they're playing against, you know, Scandinavian sides who are all fit and have the momentum of being halfway through their season. You know, would it improve our chances of you know, featuring and or perhaps not featuring in international tournaments, but if we did get there, would we be able to, you know, perhaps do a little better? I mean, look at Iceland at the moment. You know, the majority of the Iceland squad do play in Scandinavia. They're flying at the moment. They're, you know, they've qualified for their first ever European Championships. Has that anything to do with the fact that their league goes over the months that it does so? I mean, there are positives there. For me, though, partly I don't care. Partly it genuinely doesn't bother me. I'll go and watch Motherwell, you know, whenever they're playing. But I don't trust the people who run our game to make any drastic changes like that successfully. I think that the upheaval that it would cause doing such a massive march to September, you know, I think they would completely screw it up. I think you would also have bizarre situations where Celtic could go and take, you know, a month off in the middle of June so they could go play a tournament, you know, a pre-season tournament with Man City and Barcelona somewhere. I think that the people who run not just our football association and our Premier League, but those who run each of our clubs as well are really inept, basically. And I think that I wouldn't really trust them to be able to make any drastic changes like that. I think the closest you're going to get is what I heard Stuart Regan talking about, you know, starting the season a little bit earlier and having a break midway. I think that's the closest you're going to get to being able to change things massively, because I just don't think that we have anybody with the ability to do it without making an absolute cock up of it.
I completely agree there, to be honest with you. As you says, the first sort of hurdle that we'd come across would be putting in place a sort of 18-month season where there would have to be that transition. I've seen the Russian league at one point, and they went from winter to summer, from summer to the standard sort of European calendar, and I couldn't really fathom what was happening, to be honest with you, when I seen they had got so far into their season but only played so many games. Until the commentator on it, I don't even know why I was watching Russian football, to be honest with you. I don't know why, but it was the commentator says, "Oh, this is only this man because of this," and as she says as well, you know, I'm not at a point the finger at Celtic, but they got away with murder the news as it is, cancelling games beginning August or whatever, so they can go and play these friendlies. So it'd be a murder again. Come, you know, next couple of years, if that's what we go towards, and then they're getting away halfway through the year to go and play their glamour friendly tournaments, as she says.
Well, that's it, exactly. There is absolutely no, if we were to you know, go with the idea of changing our league to a March to September setup, there is absolutely no doubt whatsoever that it would be written into the rules that clubs could take, you know, X amount of games off during the summer to go and play, because obviously, you know, your team's like, you know, the big teams that you want to be playing in these glamour friendlies are all probably going to be doing the traditional season setup. So while they're having their pre-season, we're halfway through ours, and you're kidding yourself if you don't believe that they wouldn't have it written in so that Celtic and, you know, to a lesser extent the Rangers, when they decide, if, you know, if they manage to come back up and then regain, you know, any kind of semblance of what they once were, it will be written into the rules without any shadow of doubt that games against Motherwell or Hibs or Hearts or whoever it is can just be dropped at the, you know, a stroke, because they're away to play Man City in some daft pre-season tournament in the middle of Spain somewhere.
It must be said, though, given we've intimated in the past that we sometimes think that Motherwell will roll over and get their bellies tickled, to hear the general manager come out and speak up about the fact that there's a need for change in Scottish football and the summer football is such a good idea. He seems to be one of the main advocates of it and seems to be actively trying to get other teams on side, which is a positive, whether you agree with it or not, that at least he's standing up for his beliefs and the football club's beliefs, which is different from what we've seen in the past.
I do agree, but I think for me it's one of, you know, I've said before, it's one of a number of symptoms that are wrong with our game. It's all very well changing to summer football, but if you're still charging a fortune and, you know, having heavy-handed stewards and all the rest of it, then it's not going to make a great deal of difference to your attendances. Similarly, if you decide to lower the prices, but, you know, nobody is still going to pay a tenner to go and sit and watch in the freezing cold in the middle of November, then it's not going to have a great deal, you know, a great positive to it. There has to be, for me, summer football is one aspect of what needs to be a major, you know, a major plan or a major analysis of what is wrong with our game. And there has to be a number of different areas that need to be tackled rather than just pinpointing summer football because we've had a few games called off. That's not going to make any great changes without other changes that need to be implemented as well.
What? Can I also just say, Jay sort of hurt on it there as well. This is December. It's a winter month. We've had a couple of games called off and already we're hitting panic buttons and talking about summer football anyway. It's kind of farcical, I think, every time that, you know, there's one or two games that do get called off, they immediately just, you know, try and flip it on its head and say, ah, well, this is why we should be playing summer football. It doesn't really make too much of a difference to the season. There's maybe been one or two bad seasons in the last 20 years where teams have had to play a bit of catch-up because they maybe had two or three games called off. But there's never ever a terrible backlog of games where, you know, we have to extend the season by a month or anything like that. So that's what kind of annoys me about it as well. It's not as if you know, we're playing up in the Arctic Circle or anything. So that's where I'm more towards, you know, the traditional side of things. Keep it as it is, see what happens. And try and work on the actual things that are wrong with the game and the setup rather than just move it along and see what happens.
See, another element for me is if we're going to move away from the tradition of the season running from August to May, then I would want to see it being a positive for the Scottish game and there'd be more revenue to be created from it. I'm not too convinced that television companies would be falling over themselves to put more money into Scottish football just because we fiddled about with the dates. Every 2 years, there'll be a major international tournament. I know Scotland haven't qualified since 1998, but you would like to hope in the near future that they will do. I would imagine that Scottish football would begin to get in the way rather than actually be an attractive proposition.
I think you're spot on there, and a good, like, you know, examples of recent years would be, you know, the Rugby World Cup, the Women's World Cup. You know, the idea that the Euros and the World Cup themselves are big events. You know, we now have a situation, you know, Commonwealth Games, the Olympics. You know, we now have a situation where there's so many different sports televised that every summer there will be something major that people want to watch. So, what is the response to that? Do you compete with it? In which case, you've got no chance. So, do you keep the Scottish League going on while there's, you know, more entertaining things on the telly on the other side, in which case you're not going to get the figures and stuff like that anyway, and television companies might not even want to touch you? Or do you just postpone the league during that point, in which case there's no point in summer football in the first place?
Guys, we'll move on to talk about the Scottish Cup draw. Motherwell were drawn against Fourmartin or Cove Rangers. Cove came out 4-1 winners in the replay on Saturday. Tonight we're delighted to be joined by Cove Rangers fan Ian Yule, who's going to give us a bit of background on Cove Rangers and look ahead to our Scottish Cup fourth round tie. Ian, welcome along, mate.
Thanks very much. Thank you.
So a very convincing victory for you guys on Saturday against Fourmartin. You must be really looking forward to the challenge of coming up against the Scottish Premiership side.
Yeah, we are first as a Highland League club. I've been going since Cove started in the Highland League in 86, and this will probably be our most high-profile match. We've got a good mix of youth and experience, which will be fine for some of the older guys like Stuart Duff and that to be playing on a big stage again. But we've also got some excellent young players. So hopefully they'll be able to show what the Highland League's all about when we come down to Far Park.
There was a bit of disappointment today when the television ties were announced Rangers and Celtic, of course, picked for television, along with what I would suggest is tie of the round, Hearts against Aberdeen. Were you slightly disappointed that Motherwell versus Cove Rangers wasn't picked for television?
No, not really. It would have been fine to see the guys on a high-profile game on TV. But as far as the club are concerned, it'll be better for us that it's not on TV, because we'll take more... we don't get a huge fan base, but we'll take more fans down. Where I probably had a lot that might have stayed at home if it had been on TV. As far as the television thing's concerned, it's probably a wee bit of disappointment that Aberdeen's on at 5:30, because we would have had an even better support if Aberdeen had been playing on the Sunday against Hearts or whatever, because our crowds do depend a wee bit on whether Aberdeen's at home or away.
Yeah, I've noticed that from social media posts. It appears that quite a lot of Aberdeen fans have adopted Cove Rangers as their second team. Is that the case with yourself, or is it a kind of Cove first and Aberdeen second?
Yes, I actually started going along to Cove when they joined the Highland League. My son and daughter was born, and so I just managed to go to Aberdeen home games, which meant I had spare Saturdays to go to somewhere else and watch a game. And obviously Cove had just joined the Highland League, so I went along for, at that time, Cove played one Saturday at home. Aberdeen played the alternate Saturday at home, which meant I could watch them both, which was just ideal. But I still go to watch Aberdeen, but I would say Cove was my number one team now.
Jay, we've discussed it amongst ourselves, the Scottish Cup fourth round. It's not part of the season ticket, a fixture against a non-league side. How did Motherwell go about promoting this tie and make it a more attractive prospect for punters?
I think it's difficult. I think your sort of core support, who would normally go anyway, I think we're all, you know, when you get a team, you know, be it Cove Rangers or even, you know, a lower league side that perhaps you've not came up against in a few years, there is a sort of an automatic interest, a sort of natural interest anyway, because, you know, it's players you've not perhaps seen. Obviously, you know, Stuart Duff got a mention, so we know about him, but, you know, it's a team we've not really seen before, so there is that interest, but that's not really going to, you know, that'll encapsulate the fans who are perhaps already going to go. For me, there's not really a great deal you can do. I think that you know, whatever the support is, that's what it will be, because I think that, you know, every so often we have a conversation like this, whether it's a cup game, whether it's, you know, an important league game, about how we get more punters in. And I think it's that kind of short-term thinking that's actually the big issue. Everybody goes, well, what about that game? All we can do, you know, get a pal in with a voucher, or, you know, we can do a buy one, get one free, when in reality it's just, you know, you need to change everything. You need to stop making football so overpriced. It'll be interesting to see what the prices will be, actually, but, you know, you need to stop making football so overpriced. You need to stop treating fans like cattle. And once you sort of, you know, do the sort of the long-term improvements to our game, then you would like to think that a game like this would get a big crowd. You know, it should be the kind of game that people want to go, because, you know, cup games have a certain excitement about them, a certain romance about them, because of the, you know, the knockout nature of them. But for me, I think it will just be, you know, 3,500, 4,000 perhaps. I don't think it's the kind of game that you can kind of just decide that you're going to bring in a new initiative and people will start queuing. I think it will just be a fairly standard crowd, but those who go will hopefully see a good game.
Basta, it comes at a time where we'll have played St Johnston just before New Year, Hamilton Accies in the 2nd of January, and then the Cove game. It comes at a difficult time, and it's a bit of a hard sell given the expense at this time of year, isn't it?
Well, I think, you know, I think Jay's hurt it on the head, essentially. You know, it's not really about just pricing these one games with wee bonus add-ons. It's about the pricing of football. No matter how good we were doing a couple of years ago, we seemed to have, again, a core support of 4,500 fans, and that's when we were finishing second in the league. So, added expense, you see, at Christmas time, you know, people recovering just from the, you know, their night suit, they're buying their family presents, things like that. The pricing is going to come down, going to affect it. I think, and, you know, I read somewhere that the SFA have decided that it's going to be £8 minimum to get into the football for everybody. So we'll see what happens with that.
Ian, Cove have been a fantastic run of form this season. Undefeated this season, I believe.
Yeah, we lost one cup game just a couple of months ago, but undefeated in the league, played 18, won 17 and drawn one, which is a fantastic thing. The fact that we haven't got a home ground, I don't know who you are, but we haven't got a home ground at the moment. We're sharing with three clubs that are one junior club and two clubs that are also in the league with us, Fermartin and Inverurie. So it's been a fantastic run of form from the boys. We've got a smallish kind of squad, but a really close-knit squad. As I've already said, we've got some experienced players and we've got a really, really good crop of youngsters who hopefully on the day at Fir Park won't freeze, but it'll be just fantastic seeing them running out at a Premier League ground.
Do you believe it's the case that there's not a great deal of difference between the Highland League and the perhaps the lower leagues in Scottish football, League 2 and League 1?
Certainly not League 2 and 1. I'm sure Cove would hold their own, and that, obviously that is the aim for the future when the new ground is built. The aim is to go into the Highland, to the Scottish League, and I'm sure that with the youngsters they've got in that, if we could get there, would certainly give a good account of ourselves.
Ian, I'd like to thank you very much for your time. It's been good to get a wee bit of an insight of our opposition. We'll be forwarding this information on to Mark McGee and he'll be looking out for you guys, but I'd like to wish you all the best and we'll see you in Fir Park in the new year, okay?
Yeah, same to you. I don't want to give you too much luck because I don't think you'll need that much luck, but all the best to yourselves as well, and we'll see you at the beginning of January.
Cheers for coming on, mate.
Okay, thanks very much.
Cheers.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye.
Over the course of the week, we've started to utilise the Twitter polls that I didn't actually know how to work until about Tuesday or Wednesday last week. The first one we did was whether we believe that Connor Ripley's loan deal should be extended beyond January. The end result was 55% saying that yes, Conor Ripley should stay beyond January, with obviously 45% saying no. Jay, clearly a close result given there was 70 odd votes. What is your take on the situation?
I suppose I was quite surprised that it was quite close. I'm pretty sure when we spoke about it, you know, when it had been up for a wee while, I think no was leading quite early on, and that surprised me, not because I think that Conor Ripley is a fantastic goalkeeper, but you know, I would like to think there'd be a bit more realism amongst the Motherwell support. I think there's still a few people who are harking back to the days of Darren Randolph and John Ruddy and think that that is somehow the calibre of goalkeeper that we should be getting in. At the end of the day, our options are Conor Ripley, Dan Twardzig or Craig Sampson. And of those three, I think that Ripley has, you know, done enough to suggest that he's probably the first choice goalkeeper. Yeah, there's question marks about in the air, but I think some of his saves, but even against Hearts, you know, he kept us in the game at times with some of his saves. I don't think he's done anything wrong to suggest that we should send him back. Obviously, it depends on what McGee wants to do with the other two goalkeepers. I think that a club our size, who is, you know, we're told trying to live within its means, even although we are budgeting for top six, and you know, we spoke about how daft that was last week. But you know, I think three first team goalkeepers is one too many at this level. So I think one goalkeeper has to move on. Of course, we should never assign Sampson in the first place. But I'd be quite happy with Ripley staying on.
Buster, quite a lot of the responses suggested that the preference would be if it means that it would maybe free up a few wages to bring in players perhaps in other positions, then they would be quite happy to see Ripley go. But other than that, certainly the best of what has been described as a bad bunch goalkeeping-wise.
I'm not having bad bunch either, to be honest with you. Conor Ripley is a very adequate goalkeeper for this level. Very, very adequate. I've never really bought any of the thing, you know, where people were spoiled by Randolph and Ruddy. You know, obviously we were, but I've never really believed that people still thought like that until maybe when Conor Ripley made, you know, one or two mistakes here and there, and people were shouting for Twardzik to get another shot. Now, Conor Ripley might not be Dan Randolph, he might not be John Ruddy, but if you don't think he's any better than the other two goalkeepers, your eyes are quite clearly paint on. I mean, the other two goalkeepers, Samson was rubbish the last time I seen him. I can't tell you when that was. It was probably about a year and a half ago. A year ago. But, you know, I've voiced my opinion about Twardzik before, and I don't think he's anywhere near the level Conor Ripley is at the moment.
See, for me, Ripley could go from the sublime to the ridiculous quite quickly. He's a very, very efficient shot stopper, but cross balls, he seems to go for everything and very rarely collects anything. But I think that, I think Fir Park is an ideal ground for him to learn his trade. We're not going to get someone that goes on to be an England international very often, like John Ruddy or Darren Randolph, who was in goal for the Republic of Ireland in their playoff games against Bosnia. So it's kind of hard to settle for second best, so to speak, with goalkeepers of that calibre when you've been used to, over a period of 3 or 4 years, of goalkeepers of such a high standard. But that's the reality of where we're at. It's where we've always been. We've just got very, very lucky over a period of time where we got goalkeepers of such a high standard. You look back to guys like Stevie Woods, and then even trying to replace them, and guys coming in like Lee Hollis, Gunnar Nielsen, and all that. We've not, for all the good goalkeepers we've had some absolutely tragic goalkeepers as well.
You're 100% right, we definitely have. And, you know, until Conor Ripley starts causing, you know, a goal every game or whatever, I don't see the panic or the need to, you know, to wish him away, or, you know, for him to want him, nobody stay. Maybe, depending on obviously how much money towards his wages we're paying, you know, maybe financially it maybe makes sense. And I honestly think that's why Samson came in, because I think we were expecting him to leave. We've signed Samson, you know, maybe on the basis that he could have been picked up by somebody else, and we were just waiting on, you know, January coming around so Ripley leaves, and then we're back to two goalkeepers. But as you says, who knows what McGee's want to do? Who knows what Conor Ripley's want to do as well? So, I don't know when his contract or his loan is up. I assume it'll be, you know, late January. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there.
McGee has already come out and said that he's, even at an early stage, he was very, very impressed by him, but wasn't convinced that Middlesbrough wouldn't ask for him back. I don't know, I couldn't tell you what the goalkeeping situation is at Middlesbrough, but I think if it's a choice of going back to Middlesbrough to be third choice goalkeeper or being first choice at Motherwell, then surely common sense would prevail and he will continue on. I think as well that if we address our defensive issues, particularly I pointed out last week that I'm not convinced that any of our centre-half pairings, when they come together, I think if he had two solid centre-halves in front of him, that would improve his performances as well, because he'd be able to be kind of talk through the game and be better protected. So it wasn't the case that he was having to bail us out in one-on-ones like he did two or three times in the Hearts game the other week.
You can't argue with that. I mean, but I think to say that they have a solid pair in front of you is every goalkeeper's dream, you know. So at our level, again, it's maybe not going to happen.
Well, maybe just a more solid pair in them.
Probably, but again, you know, it's as you say, it's a team game. You know, if he's hungry to dry once or twice, you know, he's left one and one. He's not going to save them every time. So who knows? You know, who knows what he's thinking in regards to whether or not he's want to go back down to Middlesbrough. While you were talking there, I can see Middlesbrough have got a Greek goalkeeper or somebody with a Greek sounding name, a guy on loan for AC Milan, some other guy who looks as if he's got some sort of, you know, Czech name or something. You know, there's three or four goalkeepers here in this first team squad. So, you know, it's, how far down the pecking order is he going to be when he goes back?
Also, that I think like, it'll be interesting. I've not heard any quotes from him, but when you actually see his reaction when, you know, when we score a goal or things like that, you know, I'd be quite surprised if he wouldn't want to stay to the end of the season. I think you get the impression that he's, you know, he's quite up for it and quite passionate about, you know, the team doing well. And, you know, that's not something you see with every loan signing.
Yeah, I think he has certainly taken to the place. I suppose when it is your first club that you're getting regular first team action at as well, that must certainly help. The thing for me is, it's just, I believe that in January we will have to strengthen with two or three players, so if loan deals are taking up too much of the wages, then I would be quite happy to sacrifice Taylor, Ripley and Grimshaw, to be honest. But in an ideal world, I think we would all agree that Conor Ripley would remain at Fir Park and be our number one goalkeeper to the end of the season.
I certainly wouldn't argue.
Jay, we'll move on to finish the podcast with this week's Remember Well question. I gave you a wee suggestion at the end of last week's podcast and it's backfired given we've had absolutely no responses. So this week we'll revert to you setting the question because clearly I'm incapable.
Well, not quite. We've got five responses. It was basically just inspired by Tony Stokes absolutely throwing the toys out the pram. Last week, and it was just, you know, your most memorable player strop. It didn't even need to be a player. It could have been, you know, a manager or your mate going in the train to the game or whatever. But, you know, obviously we're looking for Motherwell-related, if possible. And I think they all are, which is quite good. Matt Miller said, it's got to be Erwin and Mojny after Gerrard's playoff game. 40-plus years as a Well fan and best Stramash I can remember. I think that was my favourite tweet, just for managing to get the word Stramash in as well.
And also gets to talk about Mojny again.
Well, aye, exactly. Remember him? What a guy. Darren Wood also said, Andy McLaren, after taking 80 minutes of abuse one day from the stand, he says, sure he gets sent off. I'm pretty sure he was subbed. From memory, I think I remember him playing on front of the stand and then Jim Jefferies moving him over to the other side, just purely because he was losing the rag, and then him getting substituted in that game.
I can remember him also pretending to kick the ball into the stand, and about 40 or 50 people ducking out the way, and then I'm just laughing at everyone that had ducked.
Well, Andrew Patterson, recurrent guest on the podcast, says you'll struggle to top John Boyle's choice words in Craig Breen's shell at Fir Park and Brown's subsequent reaction. Alistair Campbell, Alex Miller and Co going berserk at Easter Road when Stevie Cup blasted the ball into the dugout in the late 80s, and Jerry McDermott said Tommy McLean versus Billy McNeil August 1990, I was in the enclosure next to the away dugout. So a few different ones there. I think the Andy McLaren one stood out for me. Also, I don't know whether it would count as a strop, but John Spencer giving the Celtic fans the two fingers could be another one.
Well, again, a bit like the last one, I don't know if it's really a strop, but I remember when we used to sit four or five seats for the front of the East Stand. You'll probably remember this one as well, Jay.
Does it involve Paul Hartley by any chance?
No. We were playing St Mirren, and Will Heenan had come across Will Heenan had come across a couple of times to cover the run. For the centre forwards, and I had a few choice words about his wife, and twice he tried to hit me with a ball.
That's right. I thought you were actually going to go for Paul Hartley responding to esteemed general manager Alan Burrows when Alan was giving him an absolute berating, and Paul Hartley to sort of words to the effect of "sit down, fatty" or something along those lines.
I remember that one as well, actually.
See, I kind of struggle to think of one relating to Motherwell. A kind of teeniest link. I can remember Arsenal playing Birmingham City It was a game that Eduardo suffered the horrible leg break, and McFadden had scored a free kick earlier on in the game. And it finished 2-2, I'm sure. And at the end, William Gallas just sat in the pitch, knocking the hell out of the pitch for a good 5-10 minutes after the game, just refused to move. that was a decent drop. Just to finish up, guys, as we've been recording, the SPFL have announced innovative new changes to the structure of the League Cup that will start in July of 2016. It involves summer football, group stages, bonus point system, and also an increase in televised games, which will be covered on BT Sport. Basically, this kind of overwrites quite a lot of what we've been talking about earlier on in the podcast, but initial reaction, Jay, it seems slightly confusing. Things like games being drawn and then going to penalty shootouts, and you'll get a bonus point if you win that shootout. Pretty bizarre, but I suppose the idea of the difference between a friendly against a Hull City or a Fulham at Fir Park compared to a game against Albion Rovers or Accies or Airdrie in a competitive sense, that is more appealing.
It's a bit of a strange one. The actual group stages, I think, have potential. You know, when you look back at, you know, games in the 70s and stuff like that with the group stages, it seemed to be quite an interesting and potentially entertaining addition to the league. You know, you've got some different games there, perhaps, and might add a little bit of interest. But when I said earlier on about how drastic changes, I don't believe that the people who run our games have the capability of doing it properly. I think the bonus point system just completely sums it up for me. I'll just read this. This is Neil Doncaster said, "Fans, the media and clubs alike have expressed a desire for competitive summer football, which will be delivered from next July. While the groundbreaking bonus point system should add incentive to teams and excitement for supporters." No. There is nothing remotely exciting about a bonus point system that sounds as though it's out of a game show.
This is the exact situation where
a good idea, potentially a good idea, and yet we seem to be trying to be too smart with it or something like that. I just don't get that at all. It just seems a bit cringeworthy, to be honest, a little bit Americanized almost, you know, a multi-ball system perhaps.
It's the same as the split, isn't it? There's plenty of people out with Scottish football. I know that it has been tested across numerous leagues in Europe, but there's plenty of people that look at the split and scratch their heads and think, is this worth it? But we stick with it because we believe that we're different and people are smarter that run our game than the various other leagues in Europe. And it's just wrong. It's not. It just looks backwards to anyone else apart from those in charge of our game. And I think that sometimes they think so far out the box that people just, when they announce these things, are going, what the hell's going on here? It just seems bizarre.
That's it. You know, do you know what it reminds me of? You know, when you get somebody who has absolutely no personality whatsoever, so it takes to wearing, like, you know, a crazy Christmas jumper or something like that, so they can kind of go, look at me, I'm zany, I'm wacky. It's the exact same idea here. What is the point in a, you know, who sat around the table and went, oh, I've got a great idea, let's have a bonus point system? It's just trying to be clever, trying to be zany, trying to kind of, you know, you can't name your leagues after the exact same things as what they've got in England and then try and be different with a bonus point. It doesn't work. Happy with the group stage idea. The summer football thing will be interesting to see how many people go to the games because, you know, people will still be on holiday and things like that. But the bonus system's just, the bonus point idea has just got me scratching my head. It reads like something you would see in the Daily Match.
I've got a couple of questions about it here as well. I don't know how early this, you know, this is going to start in the summer, but it's getting to, there's, in Brazil, they play sort of regional competitions for the first, you know, 3 or 4 months of the season, and then for the remainder of the year, the next 7 or 8 months, they play the national championships. It seems as if they're going to start this way too early. You know, we're going to have players and teams coming back again to play games, maybe the beginning of July. So I don't think it's going to be as extreme as the Brazilian setup there, but it just looks kind of strange and weird to me. And the point system, how's this bonus point going to work? Is it going to be a case of the teams draw one each, then they hit a penalty shootout, and whoever wins that gets an additional point, 2 points for drawing a game? I don't know how that's going to work.
I'm presuming it'll be 4 points you'll get.
I would have thought you would get 2 points.
Oh, would you get two? I'm thinking you win the game, so you win. So you are right. So yeah, I suppose that makes better sense, and it's still an absolute farce.
I'm glad you're not in charge, because your idea was mental there.
Every team plays for a draw.
Aye, well, if you win a game in a penalty shootout, you've won the game. You can't just start changing the rules of penalty shootouts because the Doncasters had a brainwave.
The crucial thing is, though, the season ticket at Fir Park doesn't include cup games. You've got to make this as attractive as possible. I know people kind of sniggered a wee bit when people talked about watching tennis and playing bowls and stuff like that, but the reality is people have got other commitments over the summer because the football isn't on. You've got to make it a very, very attractive proposition to go and watch Motherwell for an extra month a year to get bums in seats, because otherwise it will fall flat in its face. Another game against Accies isn't the most attractive proposition given our record against Hamilton. Yes, I think people will be happy to see us come up against Airdrie, possibly more so if it's away. Albion Rovers, does anyone really, really care? Apart from it just gives them the fear about that Scottish Cup game a few years ago. So it has to be given a very, very attractive package in terms of the League Cup. Because let's face it, the League Cup just now is very poorly attended across the board. We've not had a home tie in a few years, but you couldn't say that East Fife or Morton really got people excited, did they?
Is it going to be regionalised?
Well, I believe that was the initial plans back in October.
Well, see, this is the issue, obviously, with only just having, you know, seen the stuff while we were recording. I mean, it just sort of kind of says that there's group stages with all 38 teams not involved in UEFA qualifiers plus the winners of this season's Highland League and Lowland League. Doesn't say anything about regionalised, at least what I can see from the brief scanning I've done.
Well, so does that mean that would just make it an absolute joke? That, can you imagine having to go to Elgin or perhaps even playing?
I mean, I can imagine going all the way to Cove Rangers and watching Motherwell churn out a boring 0-0 would be made a million times better when we win a penalty shootout for an extra bonus point.
Aye, to qualify for the what effectively is the third round, when the three or four bigger teams supposedly got in, the teams that have qualified for the Europa League and the winners of the league that have played in the Champions League. So effectively, you're just getting to the same stage again. Is it really that radical, or is it just a really long way to get to the same stage?
I just think the whole thing just seems, obviously we'll need to have a proper look. We might have missed stuff, because again, as I'm saying, we've only just kind of seen it literally 5 minutes ago, but it just sounds a little bit cringeworthy, a little bit as though they've taken another good idea and just kind of made a mess of it again. And let's be honest, anything that involves Neil Doncaster is going to be a farce anyway.
The thing is, none of us have experience of the old Tissacoe Cup, but that seems like so much more an exciting prospect and so much more interesting. I know the English teams treat their League Cup with a fair bit of disdain as well, but I think at least trialling something like that would take the familiarity of it all away and make something a bit more exciting. But essentially, all you're doing here is playing the same teams as usual, and I can't see how, when these teams that have qualified for Europe come in, that it won't be at the round of the 16 that they normally do. So it just makes absolutely no sense to me whatsoever. It's just a time-wasting exercise.
I wouldn't disagree massively. I think that it's almost kind of an attempt to tackle a few issues without really tackling them. You know, people aren't... like interest is waning a little bit, so we'll have a bonus point system that doesn't really do much. People want summer football, or there's conversations about summer football, so we'll start the season a couple of weeks earlier. You know, it seems as though it's kind of like a half-assed attempt to kind of try and address one or two problems, and you know, I can't say that it's really got me particularly excited.
Yeah, that's it. Deal with the league structures first, and don't kind of just make minor amendments to the, which is the inferior cup, and think that people are going to be satisfied. I think it's laughable, just like those in charge of the Scottish game, unfortunately.
It looks like, to me, a way to get rid of the pre-season friendly, to be honest with you. I mean, if these games are going to happen, you know, mid-July, the pre-season friendly becomes irrelevant. Now, without being disrespectful to, you know, if, for example, it's regionalised, without being disrespectful to Albion Rovers or, you know, somebody like that, or an Airdrie, you're maybe going to get more bums on seats. But what's to stop the so-called bigger teams treating it like a pre-season friendly and putting it a week inside? Obviously, it's to their, you know, their disadvantage if they don't go through, but I think it's a sort of a ploy to basically get more bums on seats earlier, you know, during the summer, basically, and get rid of the pointless pre-season friendlies that, to be honest with you, I've not attended in years. I don't know if any of you have ever bothered in the last couple of years, but, you know, I hate the pre-season friendlies.
I've got absolutely zero interest. I must admit that there's an away game at a ground that I've not been to, or then I would be much more inclined to go than if we were playing the likes of, which we've had in recent years, Fulham at Fir Park or something like that. It's just Notts Forest. It's something that I've already seen and it doesn't interest me in the slightest.
Yeah, please let me rephrase that there, because, I mean, obviously, if there's been a decent away day, Morecambe or whatever, you know, we've all went down ourselves, but I meant maybe, like, you know, as you say, the glamour friendlies at home to Fulham and, you know, the likes. So it's one of the state ones, I mean, you know, I've no interest in whatsoever. I'd much rather enjoy a decent away day. Stranraer in the past, you know, Queen of the South in the past, you know, places like that. So that's what gets me going. Just, you know, go to somewhere I've never been, enjoy a decent day out, but none of this friendly at home against some Premier League reserves.
Yeah, can't agree more. Guys, considering we've not had a game, we've talked for nearly an hour, so we better wrap this up before it goes on too long. Thanks very much, as always.
Cheers.
No bother.
You've been listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back next Monday. Until then, thank you and goodbye.
At least every 2 weeks, once every 2 weeks. And if you see Johnny Football Hero in the hall, I propose we support a 1 month limit on going steady. I think it would keep people more able to deal with weird situations and get to know more people. I think if you're ready to go out with Johnny, now's the time to